Kathleen Dunn. National Poetry Month is right now, actually, and we're delighted to celebrate with Wisconsin's Poet Laureate and Milwaukee's Poet Laureate. We're going to talk about how you craft a poem. I just think that it's a remarkable talent. I love poetry, and to be able to choose words and leave a poem with this feeling that stays with you for a long period of time, to be critical of what may be going on politically, to be talking about birds and trees and different times in history and the role of women and the role of immigrants and, well, all of the things that are subject to the poet's pen, if well done. They're very important pieces of literature. We have two guests with us this hour, and we'll invite you, too. Some of you, I'm sure, have written poetry in your time, and maybe you think some of it's pretty darn good, and you would like to share that, or you have a favorite poet. We certainly want to ask you to celebrate National Poetry Month with us. Carla Huston is joining us by phone. She is Wisconsin's Poet Laureate. She's going to be traveling all around the state, facilitating memory cafes, and working to build community around the restorative potential of poetry and the arts. The memory cafes are very interesting. We'll hear more about them. She found her voice as a poet when she was in her early 40s, and she went back to school to earn a bachelor's degree to become a high school English teacher. She became such a teacher at Neenah High School, later signed up for a creative writing class where she wrote her first poem, and she was entranced. She is vice president of The Mill, a place for writers in Appleton, where she also teaches poetry workshops. She's on the board of the Council of Wisconsin Writers. She's published several books of poetry. And we thank you, Carla, so much for being with us. Hi.
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 Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And joining us in our studios in Milwaukee is Roberto Harrison. He was born in Oregon to Panamanian parents, and he moved to Panama when he was one, then moved to Delaware when he was older. He studied math and computer science at Indiana University and has traveled widely all over this country, Africa, and Europe. He has several collections of poetry and writes about politics, identity, landscape, and travel. They surface regularly in his poetry. He's also a visual artist, and we'll talk about that as well. And Roberto, thank you so much for joining us in our studios in Milwaukee.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's talk about the art of poetry. Carla, let's start with you for a moment. If a poem is well written, it's really an incredible work of art, I think, to gather so much emotion and acute observation and not have it go on for 30 pages. It just goes on for a page or two. You have to really condense everything to the best, I would think.
I think that's true. I was explaining to a group of seventh graders last week the difference between poetry and prose. And I liken prose to a great big fat old angel food cake. And when you squish it down into this little ball of sweetness, that's poetry.
I like that. Did you bring a cake to the classroom as well?
Oh, I think they would have liked that a lot, but no, I didn't have a cake on me.
Roberto, what do you think about the art of making a poem?
It can be many things. I think it's largely about rhythm, different kinds of rhythms, rhythms of images, rhythms of ideas, rhythms of sounds, generally. I do have a quote that I could read a little bit from that might be helpful. How can I know if I write verse or prose? Reb Eladi remarked, I am rhythm. And elsewhere, without rhythm, you would not see the sun every morning. You could not. Rhythm is internal. It is a rhythm of fate. No matter how you tried, you could neither go faster nor move more slowly. You could not move but in harmony with your blood, with your mind, with your heart, in harmony. You could not be fast or slow. You could not. Is it conceivable for the moon to come after the moon? I went to God because God was my fate. I went to the Word of God because the Word of God was my fate. I went to the Word to make it my gesture. I went, and I am going. That's a quote from Edmond Jabet in this beautiful book called Two-Way Mirror, a poetry notebook by David Meltzer.
Mm. It's quite lovely. Yeah, isn't that beautiful? It's beautiful. When did both of you discover, and I would imagine that both of you have written some bad poems. When you first sat down, and I know you were not thinking of yourself as a poet, more of a long form kind of writer, Carla, but you discovered that you could do poetry. Did you just write something and somebody looked at it and said, oh, that's a beautiful poem? Or did you write something and you went, ugh, this is garbage, and threw it away and put it aside for a while? How did you become a poet? It's a very unusual thing to be in life, Carla.
Well, you know, I think that I've written a lot of really bad poems, and I think that you have to allow that, because it's like anything you want to do well, you have to allow yourself to do it badly before you learn to do it well. And I was just entranced by the ability to choose the exact word based on sound and rhythm and meaning and put those words together with other words. And that just, it still amazes me that that can happen. Mm-hmm. And yes, I still write a lot of bad poems today.
Hmm. So when you choose the exact word, I like that description, based on rhythm and sound and meaning, are you trying many different words, or does the word just sort of miraculously appear to you, or does that happen sometimes, and sometimes you really have to labor over each word?
I think both of those things happen. Sometimes you choose a word based on the other words that are around that word, those internal echoes and chimes, and yes, the rhythm of the line is very important, so some of those choices you hear in your head, and sometimes you have to wait a while and go searching for that word. Mm. It usually comes, but not always.
Right. How do you choose your words, Roberto?
These days I write early in the morning. I wake up about 4:45 and write for an hour. And I think I try to inhabit an internal space and work from there, and then go back and revise. I generally write a poem in the morning and then carry it with me around throughout the day and work on it throughout the week, and then I let it go. And then if I go back to it and I feel it still works, then I keep it, and if it doesn't, I don't. And I write a lot of bad poems, too. I've written a lot of bad poems.
Mm-hmm. So you write a poem a day?
Sometimes. It depends. Sometimes I work on a poem for a week or so, just a single poem. But I try to give myself enough time to start my day with that.
Mm-hmm. Carla, I want you to tell us, because I find this fascinating, the work that you're doing with people who have memory loss, and how words, poems, can spark other thoughts from people who have lost a great deal of memory. Tell me how that works. It's really interesting.
Well, I think that kind of reflects on Roberto's quote, the idea of rhythm and memory and music are internalized in even the way our heartbeats and iambic rhythms. And the Memory Cafe is the work I've done. First of all, Memory Cafe is it's kind of like a social meeting of those folks who are suffering from mild memory loss and their caregivers. But I have done some Memory Cafes in some memory facilities, and some of those residents are suffering from, more severe memory loss than those who are coming into a restaurant to participate in a cafe. But those rhythms of the words kind of harken back to music. And, you know, we're also looking currently at a generation of people who memorized poetry when they were in school.
Right.
I'm not so sure that that happens very much anymore. But the act of even Gary Glasner, who's organizer of the Alzheimer Poetry Project, talks about call and response, where I recite a line and they recite the line back to me. So they're not required to remember more than just one small chunk of a line of poetry, but we say it together. I say it, they say it, and then we say it together. Hmm. So you're really kind of triggering those language centers of the brain, which sometimes need a little nudging to get them moving again.
Mm-hmm. And you write about, Roberto, we want to talk about what people write about. Do you write about what's in your memory? Do you write about times past? Do you write about what you're seeing now?
I try to write about whatever comes up. I have a paragraph that I can read that might be helpful from my Snake Vision Poetics piece that will be in my book, Bridge of the World, which will be out soon in June. Often I find that I am settled with a poem when, while reading it aloud, I feel that I air out the profound wound located throughout my body, but especially in the area around my heart and my throat. This is a very raw and visceral experience which defies easy explanation. In this sense, vulnerability is non-conceptual, and I aim at a cosmic vulnerability. It's as if I need to go beyond any capacity I have to conceptualize in order to get to any truly healing energy in my work. I cannot heal myself without going beyond myself, and from there, allowing myself to be rearranged from what I am at the present moment, letting the light in, which is also beyond me. I need to continually find new ways of airing the wound, because my windows to it always close in time. And so I do not believe in stylizing or conceptualizing uncertainty. This fact has no clear implication as to the needed form of a given poem. And poems sometimes take on this quality for me after some time, or the quality can be otherwise time-dependent. A nearly impossible aim is to get past this time dependency.
Hmm.
So that's largely how I worked for a long time. I think my way of writing has changed a lot over the years and includes other things. I also say in the same statement, in the same poetic statement, a new kind of yoga is needed to allow the advanced cyborg to succeed in being human. And also, if, as Ezra Pound says, all times are contemporaneous, I conclude that all worlds are coexistent here as well.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, very nice. Carla, read us a poem. And tell me what you like to write about. I've read you like to write a good deal about women, about new roles of women, and about more traditional roles and how constraining they may be. Is that fair?
That's true, and I have written about that. But lately, in the last year or so, I've been writing about memory.
Oh.
I've lost both of my parents within the last 10 years, and I find myself looking back on those memories I have of a completely different time period from this. But one of the things I find so interesting when I ask people if they can remember their first memory, and so that gets everybody thinking about the first thing that they remember, and then I ask them if it's a memory or if it's just a story that's been told so often
right.
that it becomes the memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a poem called First Memory. First Memory. My mother clinking plates in the sink. My father sits in the big chair, sifting through news. The crackle of a paper as he straightens pages. The click whoosh of his Zippo. The sizzle of the cigarette as it catches fire. Smoke drifting like vines. Nearby, the lamp, a floating cone of light. Me floating behind it to see where the cord led, small fingers finding the open outlet. Then my father rising, papers falling, my mother rushing, calling. She said it happened, but I could not have remembered. I was only two. Yet I can still see the way the light seemed to pull the roses and ivy from the walls. I remember the shock, the way they bolted toward me. Actually, I don't remember that. Only the shadows that pulled me, memory drifting like smoke. Both gone now, the moment is mine alone. A show of slides to arrange when I need to see them, the frames shuffling to capture the time when it happened or didn't.
Mm. Did it happen?
My mother says I couldn't possibly have remembered it, but yes, it did.
It did.
She said I was too young, but she said, yes, it did happen.
Hmm. That is true, what you just said, that you reach a point where the memories that you have, that you're the only one who has them. It's kind of sobering,
right.
Isn't it?
It is, but there's no one left to ask, so you have to kind of go with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you like to read for other people, Roberto? Is poetry a solitary activity for you, or do you like to share your words?
Overall, I like to share my words. Sometimes it's difficult for me to be in front of people.
Is it?
Yes.
Because writing is solitary? It's a solitary activity?
I don't totally understand it, but I do enjoy overall getting my work out there and sharing it with people,
mm-hmm.
even though sometimes it's difficult.
So this is a big thing, because now you're on the radio.
Now I'm on the radio, yes.
But it's just us, right?
Yeah.
Just Carla and me. That's
yeah.
it. How about you, Carla? Do you like to perform your work?
I like to participate in readings, but I really like to hear what the audience has to say. I like to read my poems, and then I like to have a conversation with the people who are listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to hear their contributions, particularly when I, you know, if I'm working with Memory Cafe projects, because their stories are far more interesting than mine.
I wouldn't underestimate what you have to contribute. You mentioned memorization, that people used to memorize poems. What do you think, Roberto, what do you think about memorizing poems? If you were teaching a class of fifth graders, would you make one of the assignments, if you had free rein, to memorize a poem? And if so, what might that poem be?
I think it's great to have a good memory, but I don't have that kind of memory. I don't remember things in order. I have a different kind of memory.
Mm.
So I have a hard time remembering things like that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of memory do you have?
I just remember things out of order, somehow.
Out of order?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because your background is math and computers.
Yeah, but I never had to memorize anything from math or computers, really. I mean, I had to study. I can remember things, but I just remember things in different forms.
Mm. Do you remember the first poet that you read who really touched you significantly?
Well, I mean, Henry Miller is a fiction writer, but he changed my life when I started reading him when I was in graduate school.
Really?
For math. Yeah.
Hmm.
Him and Kerouac and Genet and Huysmans, Cendrars, people like that.
Mm-hmm. Carla, how about you? Some poet who really struck you and got you on the course of writing?
Probably the first book of poems I ever bought was at a little bookstore in Appleton called Conkey's. And it was just a small book of poems by a Nebraska poet, Grace Bauer, and I picked it up and started looking through it, and I thought, she's talking to me. So I bought the book. It's the first book of poems that I've ever owned.
Hmm.
But I like some of my favorite poets, and I'm probably going to be in trouble by not including, you know, all of them. But I really do like the poems of Dorian Locks, who teaches in North Carolina. She's taught me more about writing a narrative poem than almost any poet. And I really adore the poems of Ted Kooser because he's just so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's intimidating.
I don't think you need to worry. And your role as Milwaukee Poet Laureate and as Wisconsin Poet Laureate, Roberto, what do you see in that role? Do you have certain responsibilities?
Yeah, I think I'll be organizing some events and participating more, I think, in poetry in the area.
And you're doing some readings?
Yes. My inaugural reading is coming up, I think, June 3rd at 2 o'clock at the Milwaukee Public Library in the Rare Books Room.
Mm-hmm. Carla, how about you?
Well, I'm going to be participating in quite a few readings and doing some workshops. In fact, I'm reading this evening at the Oshkosh Public Library.
Oh.
And then participating in some Memory Cafe events, including an Arts Day event in Appleton. I think Appleton has, Fox City's area has 6 or 7 Memory Cafes, so there'll be participation, music, a little art show of art created by the residents of some of these care facilities. So my calendar is pretty busy, but I love it. I love to drive through towns I've never even been to or never even heard of before.
And you're a Wisconsin lifelong resident, so that's saying something.
There's a lot of little towns.
I know. There are a lot of little towns. Are you still teaching at the high school?
No, I retired in 2009.
Oh, you did. That was a great story. You went back to school to get a teaching certificate, then back to school again for creative writing, and you wound up teaching English at the high school. I think that's wonderful.
I did. I was old when they hired me, which is always a standing joke with my department chair, because I was in my 40s when I got my first teaching job. I never let my students know that, but yes, I started out late.
Nothing wrong with that. Absolutely, yep. Nothing wrong with that. That's good. I'm going to pause for just a moment and ask both of you to collect a couple other poems that you want to be sure to read and then describe where the idea came from and what's in the poem. And we'll be welcoming contributions from our listeners as well. It's National Poetry Month, and we like to celebrate poetry on this program. We always do every St. Patrick's Day, if not. Actually, we've done a lot of other National Poetry Months programs over the past years as well. Our phone number, as you help us celebrate this month, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. We have two guests with us. Roberto Harrison is Milwaukee's 2017 through 19 Poet Laureate, and also joining us is Carla Huston. She is Wisconsin's Poet Laureate for 2017 to 2018. She is from Appleton. Would love to hear from you about poetry. Did you memorize poetry when you were in school? Do you think that we should memorize poets? There are a lot of poets. How do you concentrate? Is there a poem, a poet that you read continuously, somebody who, as Carla said, a poet who really speaks to you? And if so, who might that be? Well, we welcome your phone calls, and we'll take them in a moment as we continue, and we'll hear more poetry here on the Ideas Network. We're celebrating National Poetry Month this hour and welcoming your contributions via poem or your thoughts about poetry, your favorite poets. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Roberto, read a poem for us. Tell us why you chose what you chose and the theme.
I have one poem, or maybe two I can read. The first one I'll read is a recent poem. I just finished it last week, or 2 weeks ago, maybe. It's called Word Pictures. I see live things escape the oceans of my pen as they settle in the dust to cut into the night and heave our safari to the home in the home of the sea. As the insects complete the plans in their attentions, as a simplex of four makes a simplex of 14, as two sevens scar the first seven to war with the ground. They were knighted by the male as a corpse, bred their seams to return the intent of the tapers, and resume what the hunt by the human makes, animals small, but to grow with the camp as a feat, mark the sea with a cannibal wound on the path, as a bison marks skies in the earth as a dark, and she marks us with nets made to hunt in the eyes. As a frozen protection proceeds, but give me your death in a complex of forms as I insect the force of our womb and arrive to the plants as they bleed. And I wash out my blood with the fire as I hold you in light that the friends of the lion resume with a heart of the death by the memory saved to the feet of the sea. I am the wound of the earth. I am made of our wandering. Okay, so there's different rhythms going on, different kinds of animals. There's some mathematics in there.
Yes.
Different kinds of histories.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little bit more dense. I could read another one that's a little bit more straightforward.
Sure, go ahead.
So this is called Horses of Insight. I walk the woods after breathing quietly and seeing everything dissolve. Four times I saw the horses, one black stallion with a lightning bolt of white streaking down his forehead, and two brown mares. Each day I sang to them and showed them each of my hands. The first day all of them came to the fence to share with me their origins. The second day, they were already at the fence when I arrived to fill the balls of light inside. The third day, a black cat with a lightning bolt of white on its chest came and played with me as the horses breathed quietly at a distance far away, but also on the inside of my heart. They were at the dividing line between each breath and carried my light from one breath to the next. The cat was happy as it was the night where morning must be born. The last day, the two mares waited apprehensively for me as a black stallion breathed upon the fence. All things must cross, and which divides him from the mares. I sang to them each day and each day showed them each of my hands. And on the last day, I fulfilled my promise to them that they would be the horses of my dream, that I would ride with them through all the lands that now arrive inside the breath. And as I said goodbye and left, I walked away, and further on, I heard the hoofsteps in the trees I thought were deer, but it was them. The horses, as they see me now, revealed to be with them.
Oh, I like that. Now, did that really happen?
Yes, that was a Read the World poem.
Oh.
So that was it was a poem that I wrote when I was at a meditation retreat.
Oh.
And I used to walk to these horses about a mile away.
Oh.
And, you know, I find meditation really transformative and profound. And when I do those, and sometimes I have experiences where I can read the world as if I was reading my internal life.
Hmm.
Whereas I think the first poem I read is that includes the world, but it's also more sort of grounded in the internal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a twilight poem or a morning poem, and this is more of a day poem.
Yeah, very nice. Carla, read to us.
Okay, I've got this one about my father. It's called When Tennis Balls Were White. Back when tennis balls were white, my father swatted lobs with my uncle. I remember watching their long arms reaching for the shot, the way their knees bent and flexed into long volleys. My father's legs burned, then tanned in those days, his breath exploding in his chest. That's likely what killed him, years of smoke and the solvent he used to restore the Briscoe. Back when tennis balls were white, he took everything inside where it stewed in the muck his lungs would become, his heart missing those tender parts, finally filled with a fluid he could never quite expel. Mm-hmm. Like a faulty spit valve on the sousaphone he played when tennis balls began to yellow.
Mm. Oh, my. I like that one, too. Thank you. Let's go to some phone calls for both of you. We're celebrating National Poetry Month this hour with Wisconsin's Poet Laureate and Milwaukee's Poet Laureate. This is National Poetry Month, in case you weren't aware. It is, so we're doing poetry. Our number is 800-486-8655. Linda in Marshfield is our first caller for you both. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. My comment is this. I would like to see a more progressive poetry, a surge going on in our school districts, because as a little girl, I remember, I know that you had mentioned, you know, what book made the most impression upon you, and I can remember as a little girl when I was 4 or 5 years old having an old book of poetry that was from my grandmother's. It was written in 1926, and the pictures were beautiful, and it was full of poetry like The Spider and the Fly and Peter Pumpkin Eater and things that actually rhymed that kids could pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gave me a progression as I went in. I got books of poetry from my grandmother that were, you know, more progressive books of poetry. Most of them were not free verse. And then went on to win a contest when I was in high school with poetry. And then as I became a college student, I was really impressed with the writing of Ferlinghetti. I really enjoyed his poetry. And so, you know, I just feel like the kids don't get enough of that and that small children don't get enough of that. I think we've kind of taken the child out of the poetry section.
And what was the contest you won, Linda?
Oh, it was just a contest that was run by our newspaper. I lived in Joliet, Illinois.
Yeah.
And it was, they asked for poetry to be submitted. It was during the Vietnam War, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a poem that was, I think, 5 lines, and I won the contest.
Hmm.
It was a surprise to me, but they really liked it.
Carla, what do you think? We don't spend enough time on poetry in schools.
Well, I agree. When I was teaching... And let me just back up for a minute. I think sometimes teachers are a little bit afraid of poetry because they're not, maybe themselves, not experienced readers. And I think teachers sometimes feel that as Billy Collins says in his one of his poems about poetry, that you need to tie a poem to a chair and torture a confession out of it to find out what it really means. And I think that we don't give children and young adults the opportunity just to enjoy poetry for its sounds and the beauty of the language, and allow them sometimes to figure out what it means, and probably even more importantly, what it means to them.
Mm-hmm. We had Billy on as a guest a couple months ago. He was terrific. He really was. He was just so down to earth and not at all full of himself, and very generous with his time. That was a treat.
I used to use his Poetry 180, a book of poems specifically for middle school and high school students, and I used to use that in my class and just read a poem from the anthology and just let the students enjoy it without having to answer questions about it or figure it out, just mm-hmm. to allow them to have some poetry that they could enjoy.
Very nice. Roberto, do you remember poems from childhood? Were you around poetry in school?
I was not around poetry when I was growing up. I listened to music, so I got poetry from that.
Yes.
I found some books early on that kind of prepared me a little bit for some of the books I encountered when I was in graduate school, like Camus' A Stranger and Khalil Gibran's The Prophet and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I didn't start reading poetry until after I got to grad school.
Do you think that children should?
Yeah, I think poetry is very important. There's a lot of great poetry going on right now in this area and around the country. It's a great book center, Woodland Pattern in Milwaukee, it's got one of the best collections of poetry in the world. So there's lots going on.
There is, by golly. It's amazing for something that we overlook, Carla. There's a lot of poetry being written.
And I'm hoping that a lot of it's being read as well. I think that, you know, writers of poetry should be voracious readers of poetry, and we should be encouraging each other and, reading each other's poems and sharing in the conversation mm-hmm. that poetry should and can become.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda, so much for your call. Let's go to Muhammad in Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Kathleen. I wanted to know if either of your guests is familiar with a poem that my mom gave me a while back before she lost her vision. She's 82 and was admitted to the hospital with a stroke and has been recommended for hospice from there. And she discussed that she wanted this read at her funeral. And I don't have it with me, but part of it says, "Don't stand at my grave and cry because I'm not there."
Hmm. Carla, are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. I'm really sorry. I'm not.
No, Roberto?
No, I haven't heard of that.
I'm sorry, Mohammed. Do you know who the poet is or not?
No, that's what I'm trying. I mean, before I read it, I don't want to plagiarize or, you know, my mom could have written it, but I've Googled it.
Oh.
And so just ironically, when we got this news this morning and you have this show about poetry, I just thought I would ask. But thank you very much anyway.
Oh, well, maybe somebody that'll ring a bell with somebody, Muhammad, and just keep listening. We hope that we can find out for you.
Sure will. Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, thanks so much. He's going through a hard time. Janice is next in Kenosha. Hello, Janice.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Janice.
I have a poem to read.
Oh, good. Did you write it?
Yes, I did.
Excellent. Tell us about it.
Well, I wrote it and gave it to my granddaughter, who was very outspoken, and sometimes she would regret her words that she'd spoke a little hastily.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave it to her and framed it, and she just loved it and hung it up in her living room so she could read it during times, I think, when she felt like she should express herself. Anyway, it's called In Black and White. And it goes like this. I love to chew on words, then spit them out like tacks. Those that have sharp edges, I wield just like an axe. If they're hot and spicy, I shout them out at once. The short and perky small ones, I throw and watch them bounce. Sometimes I like to rhyme them and turn them up on end. Sing song and then to time them and stretch them till they bend. This wordiness is wonderful. It really does delight me. That's why I hate it so when my words come back to bite me.
Oh. I like that.
Well,
it's good.
She liked that I had written something especially for her,
absolutely.
I think. And this kind of describes the way she proceeds in life. So,
right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and she'll have that forever. That's great, Carla, to write poems for those you love, right?
Wonderful. She should be very lucky to have a poet whose work is hanging in her living room.
Absolutely. My mother, just while we're talking about parent stories, my mother should have been one of those people who writes somewhat elevated poetry for Hallmark cards, so that every time there was a celebration in the family, you know, 16th birthday, 21st birthday, she'd write these long, epic, rhyming poems, and she was darn good at it. But when she got sick later in her life, she'd write, you know, how the doctors in your life can somehow become, they're keeping you alive, and so you have this intense relationship with them. So she would write these poems to her. She'd write them to all our teachers, so we would get better treatment for the teacher, because my mom wrote a poem about them, but also to her doctors, and the doctors loved that she had done this, and they'd frame her poetry in their offices. It was a good skill to have.
That's wonderful. Well, poetry can be very humanizing.
yes, it can. Oh, I really like that one, Janice. It's a great story as well. Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I have a question and a comment. My comment and reminder is that in Eau Claire on Monday the 24th is the Robert Frost Poetry Day, giving the connection between Frost, nature, and my husband, Fritz Schmidt, mm-hmm. who donated the poems. But poetry, I used it in school a lot, and I think one of the reasons that kids are turned off is back in the old days when a poem was read, teachers were too concerned with the form. By the shores of Gitche Gumee Bum Bum. Instead of visualizing and trying to see what the poem meant. By the shores of Gitche Gumee, by the shining bright sea waters, and on. I used to give my children a copy of The Road Not Taken, written in Robert Frost's handwriting, if they memorized the poem and could tell me what they thought it meant. Mm-hmm. And an awful lot of students did. I think that we do an injustice to poetry, because a lot of young people write poetry, but it's in a different language.
Yes,
than ours.
Right.
You know, it's like some of the music. It isn't my language. It isn't my swing and sway, but they are expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine just wrote a book on poetry, and he's concerned that young people are not reading it, that it's not being taught. Mm-hmm. But I know it's being written, because a lot of my old students would bring their things in and say, hey, what do you think of this?
Mm, that's great, Chris. What about young people hearing different rhythms? There's a whole movement in schools all over the country now where students are doing poetry slams, and it's a very different rhythm than Robert Frost, certainly. But I love those contests. Do you know, is the word, the poetry word, being kept alive, Roberto? Are you aware of those?
Oh, yeah,
young
there's
people?
Lots of great poetry happening. I just served as co-editor for this Resist Much, Obey Little anthology, inaugural poems to the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a poem I'd like to read from that. It's by a young poet living in Maine, Kristen Case,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Benediction. Fragility of the body, for example, the failure of eyes publicly disclosed by the fact of glasses, or shivering of the body in response to cold, public vulnerability to weather everywhere, to carry this fragility into the world, to hold it with you where you are, watched to be publicly wounded. To be a public body, to risk address, to suffer visibility, suffer visibly, an intimate address, to be a body seen, to listen, to be subject to sound, a sounding onto the body to absorb others, to absorb the voices of others, to be publicly wounded, to carry voices and sounds, to be cold in public, to be visibly cold, to have a body, to be a body publicly, to want, for example, food, breathing publicly, the private mechanisms of the breath made visible as in exercise, or cold visibly, to be a living body, a body visibly, to carry this fragility publicly, to risk at all moments both beauty and non-beauty, for example, to risk at every moment desire and absence of desire, publicly to confess tiredness, hunger, headache, breathing, publicly to confess brokenness, boredom, breathing, to confess weather, or, for example, crying publicly or visibly stopping oneself from crying, to show outward sign of, to show any inward mechanism, to show. The world does not despise you. The world does not despise you. The world does not renounce your body. The world does not despise you.
Hmm. And who wrote that?
Kristen Case. C-A-S-E.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you very much for your call, Chris. And what do you say about that? When people having different rhythms, different voices for different generations, is there a young people's poetry that's different that can't speak to all? Can your poetry speak to all? Should poetry speak to all?
That's too many questions.
I'm sorry. Sometimes I get that way.
I don't think that all poetry is going to speak to all people in the same way that all music doesn't speak to all people,
right?
Because we all have our tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you find a poetry or you find a music that speaks to you, then that's the one that you should pursue. And as we get older, our tastes change, and the way we hear things changes as well. And so, students just being exposed to poetry and let them have the opportunity to explore and find what speaks to them is going to go a long ways into, getting them interested in poems and also maybe even getting them interested in writing. I don't think that there's one prescriptive author or time period in poetry that's going to speak to everybody, but you just have to find your own place.
Right.
I recommend people discover the library.
Absolutely.
You can just take a stack of poems and sit down in the on the floor and read until you find something that you like, and then take that book home with you and read it again and again. But the library is a great resource.
Libraries are good places. I think we may have an answer, I hope, for Mohammed, who called in earlier. Cheryl in Brilliant. Hi.
Oh, hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm just calling because I found the name of that of the author of that poem for Mohammed.
Excellent.
It's Mary Elizabeth Fry.
Mary Elizabeth
Fry, F-R-Y-E.
Okay.
And if the poem goes, "Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep." If it goes like that.
Yes, I think it does.
Yes. Okay, that's her then.
Yeah, and the name of the poem is. Do you know?
Just "Do not stand by my grave and weep" is what it says.
Oh, thank you so much. That'll be so important for him to hear that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, good. Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. Mohammed, I hope you heard. That's good. We got it for you. All right, we're going to take more phone calls in a moment. It's National Poetry Month, and we are talking about poetry this hour of the program. We have the Poet Laureate for the state of Wisconsin for the next year, Carla Huston, and Roberto Harrison, who is Poet Laureate for Milwaukee for the next 2 years. They are both poets, published poets, and we're celebrating the poetic word. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network. Dan in Michigan, next caller. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just have a short poem that I wrote. It's really short, a couple verses. But I wrote it when I was thinking about missing the freedom that people miss once they become an adult. So,
Okay, sure. Dan. Yeah, make sure you're close to the phone. You're a little, the phone line is a little sketchy here, but.
Okay.
Okay.
I miss running through the woods and staying up too late, wandering and wondering where the world will take us. We'll risk everything just to see how far we go with fearlessness and confidence, like running through the snow.
Well, thank you so much. There are passages in our lives that make us stop and think, aren't there? Childhood's done. This is what I'll miss. This is what I'll look forward to. Thanks, Dan, so much. Oh, we got all kinds of people with poems now. Molly is next. Hi, Molly.
Hi. I don't have a poem. I have a. I volunteer at the local grade school and work with first, second, and third graders. I say they're helping me to learn how to read, and I bring books from home. And the books I find, the stories I find that holds their interest the most are the ones that rhyme, are the poems. I bring my grin and giggle book that I used to read to my daughter and then my grandson, and now I'm reading to these, or they're reading to these children are reading to me. Mm-hmm. And it's the rhyming that, you know, some that'll just kind of go off and don't want to read, don't want anything to do with it, but I bring those books out, and that gets their attention.
Mm, yeah. What do you think about rhyming, Roberto?
There's lots of different ways to rhyme. I'm interested in form, so I'm interested in rhyming. I do rhyme. I mean, I think I did some rhyming in the first poem that I read today.
Mm-hmm. Is it a good way for children to learn poetry, do you think?
I think it's a good way for everyone. I mean, as to go back to how I started talking about poetry, about the rhythms of ideas, rhythms of sounds, the rhythms of images.
Mm-hmm. Carla, what do you think?
Well, I think that rhyming is, I think it appeals to a lot of readers of poetry, but especially children, because a lot of children's poems have an inherent rhythm in them, and I think that appeals to them, and they learn it more easily when things rhyme, that there's just some kind of brain to rhythm to rhyme connection that makes so much sense, particularly for young people.
Yeah, it was always a good way to learn dates for things for me. You know, in 1492, Columbus sailed, it's not the true story, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, but I was thinking, well, we should have used that for a lot of different dates in history, and you remember them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's very poetic. It isn't, but you'd remember. Let's go to Pat and Richard.
That might be a really good learning tool. I said that might be a really good learning tool for a student studying for an exam.
Absolutely, yeah. Pat in Richmond, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to recommend a particular author of poetry for children.
Okay.
Jack Prelutsky, Preluksky.
Okay.
And we read these books to our kids. We found them at the library. Mm-hmm. And we ended up buying them all because the kids would, you know, sit with them for hours. And ours was a reading household. But, you know, these books were favorites.
Mm.
And there's a lot of rhyming. They're short stories. They're, you know, they're silly. I could read a four-line one for you.
Sure, go ahead. We have about enough time for that.
Okay. So I won't. You're saying?
No, four lines you can do.
Okay.
Yes, please.
The spider. The spider's lying talented, weaves silver web of silken thread, then waits for unobservant flies, to whom she'll not apologize. So that's, you know, he's just, they're all like kind of episodic and fun and silly and funny, and it's a marvelous way to get kids
wonderful
interested in poetry.
Absolutely. It's great. And we're just about out of time here. Your latest work of poetry, we want to give both of you a chance to talk about what you've done, Carla, most recently that you'd like people to take a look at.
I've just recently published a small book of poems with Five Oaks Press. Came out in January. It's called Grief Bone.
Grief Bone. And all the best to you as you travel the state. It sounds like very important and wonderfully inspirational work. Roberto, your latest work.
I have two books coming out this summer.
Oh.
Bridge of the World and Yaviza.
Okay, and they'll be out some?
Bridge of the World should be out in June, and Yaviza should be out in July.
Wonderful. And you are, tonight you are, Carla, at the Oshkosh Library at what time?
I'm 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock tonight. Roberto, you'll be at Central Library June 2nd.
June 3rd.
June 3rd, sorry, June 3rd.
2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Thank you both so much. Happy National Poetry Month. Thank you. Our thanks to the Wisconsin Poet Laureate, Carla Huston, and we also thank Roberto Harrison, Milwaukee's Poet Laureate, both of them for being with us. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. It's wonderful. Audience that loves poetry and is willing to read poetry on the radio, too. There's nothing wrong with that. Thanks so much to Natalie Guyette for producing this hour, Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we will be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you ever so much for listening, and thank you ever so much for all of your contributions.